We're going to continue our Freedom Friday series today with an Atlantic man, Bud Lindemann, in with us here this morning. Bud, an Atlantic and Cass County native who grew up here in this area, was drafted in 1944 by the U.S. Army, and you were one of the young guys during World War II.
Right. I had to have a deferment after I turned 18 to finish high school. Middle of May 1944, I graduated from high school, and on May 31st, I was enlisted in the Army, sworn in Camp Dodge in Des Moines.
And they didn't waste any time putting you to work.
We went right directly to basic training, took 17 weeks of basic training in Camp Landing, Florida. Came out, I had infantry training. I got to come home for a little while and caught a train from Fort Smith, Arkansas to Boston, Massachusetts to Camp Miles Standish. They took us down, put us on board, and we joined a convoy and headed for Europe.
You were put in a leadership role early on.
Yes, I was assistant squad leader right then. After the war was over, I was one of the younger ones. The older ones got to go home, which was right, and they were forming a group of units to be the law and order of Germany. After the war was over, there was chaos as far as any organization was concerned. They took the Nazis out of power, and with it went a lot of mayors and police chiefs. And so they had district constabulary, they called it, and organized these units, and they needed a first sergeant, and I got nailed as an opportunity to organize a company, and gave me the rank of first sergeant, 19-year-old first sergeant, and we took charge of Germany.
That's an awful lot of responsibility for a 19-year-old guy.
I didn't really realize it till I look back upon it, and I don't. It almost was scary.
Well, they obviously saw something in you that that made them want to do that in the first place. But you were always put in a place where it was, seemed to be a key area. The Battle of the Bulge, for instance, was one where you served.
Right. The Battle of the Bulge was really technically called the Ardennes. It was fought in the Ardennes Forest. When I arrived, that was in December of 1944, and the Germans had just started to invade Belgium. I came in as a replacement. The company had taken some casualties, and I came in as a rookie soldier, as a replacement. They didn't have good equipment for us. They came ill-prepared for that. And I ended up with no overshoes. I've got big feet. And they said, sorry, boy, we don't have any size 13 overshoes. And it wasn't very long till I had frozen feet and was hospitalized.
I think a lot of folks around here have seen the helmet that you have with the bullet hole in it. Can you tell that story?
Okay. We went on after the Battle of the Bulge, went up into northern Germany and recuperated, slept about 24 hours a day. We'd been in a lot of stress. Finally crossed the Ruhr River. Our division made a crossing there and went across northern Germany. We were coming from the west, going east, and the Russian army had been coming from the east in down towards Berlin, and we were to meit them at the Elbe River. That was as far as we could go. We'd take town by town. Sometimes we had resistance, sometimes we didn't. And we walked all night. They told us when we took this little town, they said you can sleep. And that was quite an incentive to keep going. I remember going to sleep walking and walked right into a tree and smashed my face, and I was angry about it. And that morning, we came to the edge of this little town, a little German town about the size of maybe Wyota, and it was quiet. But I remember now that there weren't any dogs barking, there wasn't any noise. We didn't know if it was occupied or not. What we did was we just went in attack mode towards it, and if we ran into trouble, we took care of it. And we were waiting around. It was just getting light, and the captain said, we got to have somebody go out as first scout. We rotated that position because it was a high-risk position and very dangerous, and they argued, and they discussed whose turn it was, and they couldn't come to any conclusion. They were swearing, and it got loud and ugly, and I finally grabbed my M1, and I did one of the things that I had first learned in the Army, don't volunteer. And I started out across the field. I got about 60 yards from the edge of the town, and somebody opened up with an MP-40, a German machine gun, and just threw a whole clip at me. I hit the dirt just as fast as I could, which didn't take me very long then. I looked around, and I couldn't see anybody. There was a hedge around the edge of the town, and the lieutenant behind me hollered, "Lindy, what do you see?" And I raised my head just a little bit to take a better look, and I felt that bullet hit. I heard the bullet, I heard the firing of the shot, and I heard the bullet hit my helmet, and I knew it was hit, but I didn't know how bad it was. And I thought from the way it felt that maybe it just creased it. I reached up, and there was a hole in the front, and it wasn't a crease, it was a hole. And then I put my hand in the back of the helmet, and it was an exit hole that was a rugged mess. And I knew I had taken one pretty close to the head, so I reached my hand up to see if I was bleeding. I wasn't bleeding. And it came to me that I got to get out of here. And they taught us in basic training. We did it over and over. I thought they were overdoing it. But when you get pinned down like that and have to get out of there, you move laterally, either left or right. And I chose to go right, and I had to get up and go. And they had told us you can move to the count of 10. Down, you wrap your rifle in your stomach, you go down, you roll. The reason you roll is you're not where they last saw you go down. And I got up, and I thought, this guy's pretty good at put that hole in my helmet, and I'll go down on 8. So I got down on 8 and rolled on near a fence that had washed away in the backside, and I had a little cover, and we went on from there.
You wonder why, how come you made it and some others didn't?
Well, the good Lord had his hand in that. He wasn't through with me, so my faith is strong, and I think that deity was involved.
Well, and there are a lot of times, a lot of instances like that where you just never know what's just outside there. Sometimes it's the enemy, sometimes it might be something else.
Right, but the lieutenant crawled up beside me, and a guy from C Company crawled up. There's three of us laying there. And I had rolled in behind this barbed wire fence, and they just hammered and hammered and hammered hundreds and hundreds of rounds of ammunition. You could hear them popping and go over your head there, breaking the sound barrier. And this guy from C Company was laying next to me, and he started yelling. He was hit, and I looked over, and he'd got something had hit him, and his cheek was bleeding a little bit, and they'd hit one of the barbed wires, and a little fragment of that had hit him in the cheek, and I've hurt myself that much shaving. And anyway, he had a rifle grenade on his rifle, and that's a setup so it'll throw a grenade further than you can throw it by hand. And it was phosphorus, which is smoke. And the lieutenant said, "Give me that rifle," and so I took the rifle, and when he went to raise his head to shoot it at the guys, they just opened fire, and they just got a cloud of stuff. And so he put his head down, and he said, "Look out, it's going to go." Well, he didn't notice that the rim on the phosphorus grenade was hooked on the top wire of the fence. And when he pulled the trigger, it rolled out about 20 feet in front of us and lay there. And I thought, I got by. The Germans didn't get me, but I think this lieutenant is going to do me in. But anyway, it went off, and phosphorus, if it gets on you, just will burn till it's out. It'll go right through your flesh anywhere. But anyway, we got a smoke screen out of it that was just absolutely a beautiful sight to see. It was between us and them, and we moved a whole platoon of guys up in that while that smoke was there, and got in the backside, and everybody pulled. And it wasn't quite over yet. I don't know if any of the Germans escaped. But anyway, I ended up with a hole in my helmet.
I know you were telling me a story, too, about sometimes the enemy will kind of sneak up on you, and sometimes you just kind of had enough of that, and you wanted to be alert about those things, and you had an instance come up there, too, where sometimes what you're shooting at isn't what you necessarily think you're shooting at.
We moved on through northern part of Germany and had battles here and there, and we finally arrived at the Elbe River and met the Russian army, and the German army had by the thousands. I think we took 147,000 German, about 15,000 of us total, maybe only about 5,000. took 140-some thousand German prisoners. We had them in such excess that we had to take them in groups of 100, 150, one soldier, GI at the back, one in the front, and take them back to the compound. And day and night, we took them back. They were trying to get away from the Russians. They'd so mistreated the Russians when they had gone into Russia, and the German soldiers had gone into Russia. It was payback time, and it wasn't pretty. But pretty much the firefights were over. All I wanted to do was surrender and go home, and it was fine by us. But one night, three German soldiers would never figure that out. They surely must have known the war was about over. They came through, and they got into one of the foxholes that we had vacated, and they got in a fight with my good buddy Spike Sunday, who was a boy from back east, and he was a tough cookie, regular Army. He was throwing grenades, and they were shooting, and finally, one of them got shot, got killed, and they went on through and got in behind us, and I could see them in the moonlight back there, and I called back to headquarters and asked them if we had anybody back there, and they said, nobody there, and I said, okay, good enough, and I grabbed the BAR, which is a Browning automatic rifle. It holds a clip of 20, and it's you can fire it automatically, and I cleaned that clip of 20 on these guys, and they dropped the dead guy and took off. I presume they went on back over the river. I didn't like the idea of them sneaking up on us, and so the next day I called back and I said, send me a trip flare. And a trip flare is a thing like a 4th of July fireworks deal. It fires a projectile into the air that is phosphorus, but with a parachute. And it lights the area, and it has tripwires like spokes on a bicycle. And if you walk in there and trip any of those flares, wires, it'll trip that flare. So I got all ready that evening, got the grenades laid out, bent the safety pin back so they would pull easy, and waited for it to get dark. And in the dark, of course, just looking at the darkness and the trees and all, and you can hear all kinds of things, and your imagination will fill in for all the rest. And all of a sudden, I heard the trip flare go off. The thing fired, and I started. I had good fast hands back then, and I fired about 6 grenades down there where the projectile was that sent a flare in the air, and they started boom, 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 and I ducked my head because the shrapnel comes back at you too. And all of a sudden, the flare went off, and I thought, oh boy, there's going to be German soldiers down there, and here comes a fight. The flare went off, and I looked down, and it was nothing, nobody. And then I happened to see hopping out of the middle of the mess was a rabbit, and the rabbit hadn't gotten hit. The grenades, when they go off, go out and up. The shrapnel goes up, and they went right up over the rabbit. I'd thrown 6 grenades at a rabbit. And I got a phone call just in minutes. And the captain said, Lindy, what's going on out there in the riverbank? And I said, Captain, we've had a malfunction of equipment. It was the best I could do at the time. Got by with it and took a little kidding later on. Some of the funny things that do happen, it isn't all serious. Most of it is.
Well, it's good that you have something of levity to kind of look back on, too, to kind of, you know, keep the normalcy around all the craziness that's going on.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing that you come out sane at all.
You did a lot in the short 2 years and one day that you had spent during your service. Even got to, march with Eisenhower?
I carried the flag for General Eisenhower, and I never was quite sure. I think it's probably because I'm tall. But I got picked for some things. They told us there was going to be this was after the war. The summer of the war was over. And down at Heidelberg, they had a nice, actually it was a soccer field, but a nice parade ground. And they chose our division and our battalion to do the parading. And the parading is not the four-man front parading. It's a lot like the bands do. There's whole rows. You do a big wheeling turn. But anyway, with it is the colors, 2 guys with rifles and 1 with a flag. And they came to me and they said, the captain wants to see you. down to the CP command post. So I went down. He said, "Linda, you're carrying the colors for the parade. Eisenhower's going to decorate some high brass, and they want it done, and we want it done right." I was amazed that they even had picked me out, and I still do not know why, except maybe I'm tall. But anyway, we got down there that day and got all set, and with it you have to have a band, and we had the division band, and we marched, and General Eisenhower was 20 feet away, and I got a good look at a man that I had really admired. A few years ago we were in Kansas, and I stopped to see his grave and saluted the old man, and I respected him and was honored that I carried the flag for General Eisenhower.
You know, when you think about some of the experiences that some young people today have between the 18 and 20, their 18th birthday and their 20th birthday, it's nothing compared to what you had an opportunity to experience, both the good and the bad. But, of course, all that helped to develop the guy you are today. And we thank you so much for everything you did, and we salute your service, too. Thank you for all that you've done for us, and continued good health and good luck to you.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.